It's another Monday night, and you are in the zone here on News Talk 96.1 and AM 1370 WGCL. David Glass with you again on another Monday night, and we are, as always, taking your phone calls at 333-2665. Plenty to talk about tonight as we have advanced ourselves through the NCAA tournament's first weekend and have our Sweet 16 all set up, not unexpectedly. Unfortunately, around here, the Hoosiers are not among the 16, going down in a 81-76 final to Wichita State in their first round game. Wichita State turned around and beat Kansas, their area rival that hadn't played them in over 20 years, 78-65 in the game yesterday to get them to the Sweet 16 and send the two-seed Kansas home. And, of course, if you've been watching, you know that the tournament does have or has had its share of some drama, although a lot of the chalk, at least to some degree, is heading on. But you lost Kansas. Michigan State beat Virginia over the weekend. And of course, Villanova, the one seed that will not be advancing in the Eastern bracket. So a few upsets. Big 12 has had lost a few teams, but also has a few going on. And the Big 10 has Wisconsin and Michigan State left to play. 333-2665 is the phone number. Before we look at the whole thing, we'll start to put a bow here on the Hoosiers' season. A 20-14 finish. 10 seed in the tournament against the number 7 seed Wichita State. I don't know that anybody proves anything by winning anything in the tournament as far as seeding, overseeding, underseeding, anything like that, but I think we all agreed Wichita State could have very well gotten a higher seed, and they looked the part, Glass. And as we talked last week about this Wichita State team, the danger of this team, its backcourt, its ability to defend, its toughness inside, it pretty well all showed up. I'll give the Hoosiers credit. I think they gave them a pretty darn good game of the entire thing, despite really not being great by any stretch on the defensive end, but made it hard, at least on Wichita State, made Wichita State work awfully well. And at the end of the day, the best player on the team was a point guard. He just happened to be a point guard that was wearing the lighter colored jersey. Fred Van Vliet was awfully good.
Yep, we knew that going into it. And Wichita State showed Indiana something very valuable, that you don't have to have four guys 6'9 or better. It would be nice if everybody could be like Kentucky and have that matchup. But it wasn't like Wichita State was throwing out some major height there. They find a way to play with what they have, and they find a way, obviously, for the last 3 years to be very good at what they do. Again, Kansas is a team with plenty of height and guys up front that are long and athletic. And Wichita State, yeah, just a bunch of 6'3", 6'4", 6'5", and a 6'7" mm-hmm. guy play a system that gives people problems. They're almost a little bit like Butler, maybe not as methodical, but very, very disciplined. They don't turn the ball over. They don't foul a lot. They don't hurt themselves. They know they can't because they don't have that size. They don't have that outside shooting other than Baker, and he did nothing against Indiana. Yep. But Fred Van Vliet was excellent, and you saw why. We talked about it wasn't going to be a battle of Van Vliet versus Yogi, and it really wasn't. It was two guys in the first half getting nothing from anybody else on their squad, or had to carry their own teams to get to that
point.
So
they went ahead and did it.
Well, they had to. You're right. It wasn't like it was a it's 50-50 and they're just alternating going one-on-one with each other. That's not what happened. Van Vliet only had 8 points in the second half. I'm not sure how many Yogi ended up with. It was right around there because I think it was 19-15 at halftime and then 27-24 to finish. So there you go. So it was two really good guards. And again, Wichita State gave Indiana problems because the Hoosiers, in my opinion, don't like teams that get after you and get up in you. They like that team like Michigan that likes to get up and run and down, up and down the court. And
Maryland is happy
we're gonna outscore you. We're going to do that. But the disappointing thing about that is, and we talked about that all year, we thought Indiana would be comfortable more in games where it would be high scoring. Well, they're now 0-6 when they've given up more than 80. Yeah. So we've got a real weird dichotomy here. It was the, we don't want to grind it out. We don't want to get bogged down because if we get bogged down, it doesn't work. But we don't get real high-scoring games because we don't win any of those either. So somewhere in there is the happy medium. And that's a sign, Dave, of a team.
Well, we keep going up against teams that defend them better. And even if you stretch them out and make them work harder doing it, they're still the better defender team.
Well, and they still and if you give up 81 points or 80 or more, it was 0-6 this year. So get up in a track meet, which we thought maybe that would help things. Well, it led to 6 losses and no wins. Yeah. Games you grind it out and get down and slug around with other teams – I don't know. So the Hoosiers finished with 20 wins. It's three better than last year. It's losing nine straight to tournament teams to finish the season. And you're the math guy in the group. According to the math next year, it's something's got to give. And the Indiana basketball on the court season is over. But everything else that's still going on with you have this many guys coming in. No, nobody leaving, so that's two right there. You've got rumors, innuendo, and everything else swirling around. Troy, Yogi, Blackman, whatever it could be. So that's the interesting thing. But the game itself, I think Indiana gave themselves a fine. What's the word I'm looking for? A fine recognition. Yes, they came out, led the game for a while. But a point I've been harping on for months has been in these games where Indiana must win, and the last, I believe, six of them now, never led or tied any of these games in the final 10 minutes. So no, that's a team that hasn't got, can't get to the top of the mountain and can't get back over it when faced with adversity. And that's something this team never learned or never figured out as the season went along, because it started with a home game against Purdue. That was going to turn things back around. We saw it at Northwestern. You saw it at home to Iowa. They trailed for the final 26 minutes. Michigan State after that. Again, all they needed was one of these to make themselves easier. And then against Maryland and against Wichita State. So it was just, you could see how close they would get. And it would just be one jump pass thrown out of bounds here,
yeah,
or one missed layup there, or this team hits a couple shots there. It just, but after that many times of doing it, you just saw it was a flawed team, and it needed to play almost perfect basketball to beat somebody better than they were. And to be frank, they didn't coming down the stretch.
No, they got to get within several one. Times down the stretch, in the last couple minutes of the game. And like you mentioned, I mean, the quintessential play is they had a couple different possessions where they traded a couple free throws and got a bucket or a couple free throws themselves, kept it within that 2-point range, and then had a chance. And it's a Troy Williams. They get a rebound. They toss it to Troy. Troy tries one thing. He throws it and ends up going over Yogi's head and out of bounds.
Right.
Because
he's in the air in the middle of the lane.
Exactly. I won't blame anything on one play, but that was kind of the quintessential play of the year. You make a good play to get the offensive rebound. You kick it around to a couple guys to give somebody a chance. He tries to get somebody else involved and just can't make a real good play at doing it. And so I suppose at the very least at the end of the year, you're playing within that close margin with a team that's looking awfully good themselves in Wichita State. It's now 30-4 after their game against Kansas. But just not enough, and not, I think that the key to me is it's not sewed up enough at any point in their game, at any aspect of their game, to be able to afford much going wrong in their other games. I mean, whether it's the passing, they try hard to pass the ball and get everybody involved, and yet they're still inexact with that. With the shooting, sometimes you see them come down the floor and it's way too quick that shot's going up. Sometimes it goes in, a lot of times it doesn't. Defensively, look, one of their better efforts, I would say, but effort doesn't matter much when a guy's still getting rebound or getting layups and they're getting multiple offensive rebounds.
44-24 were the points in the paint. They didn't play a guy over 6'7" for more than a minute.
And rebounding, they got beat on the rebounding by two at the end of the game.
26-10.
This is a team that's had games where it's led by multiple digit or double digit rebounds. So it can do that, but at the end of this particular game, it got out toughed by a Wichita State team whose calling card is toughness. And I think you mentioned it correctly. Those are the types of teams that give this team a problem, because this team is just not very tough, especially on the inside and especially on the defensive end. I don't think we're speaking out of turn here or saying anything brilliant.
It's
what we saw.
The record shows us that, and they didn't beat any tournament teams down the stretch. And the other part was, you come out of Wichita State comes out of a timeout in a 1-point game, and what do? They find their 6'4". Four-year starter, to Cale Cotton on a mismatch with James Blackman in the post. They went to a strength versus a weakness, and they get a one-foot layup out of the deal. Mm-hmm. So they took a 1-point game up to three. And, again, that was a play where it wasn't settling for a jump shot. I'm not saying Indiana did that. But again, you saw who was you could argue Indiana's weakest defender is Blackman.
Yeah.
And what they did is they went out and sought him out, and they got their 6'4" senior right next to the basket who laid it in. And those are what experienced good coach teams do. And the Hoosiers on their day needed to make more threes, but they shot 50% and lost?
11-22.
I mean, that's a pretty good number right there. And we hoped that wouldn't be the case if you needed more than that. But as we saw, as Joe and Fish told us after the game, 44-24 points in the paint. Again, nobody taller than 6'7" for Wichita State played any significant minutes. 26-10 in the second half. What's easier to make, a lot of threes or a lot of layups? Well, points in the paint, plus 20 on that. So that's, again, there's these things all add up, Dave. And they didn't add up to a victory. And Kansas had some of the same problems yesterday as well, as they got their doors blown off.
Even more so from Wichita State. So impressive team, but it puts the Indiana season too bad officially. We'll talk a little bit more about that when we get back from the break, and then look forward to the NCAA tournament and our Sweet 16. Back in just a couple minutes. Dave and Glass with you in the Zone. All right, you're back in the Zone with Dave and Glass on News Talk 96.1 and AM 1370 WGCL.
Janice Locksmith is with us this afternoon. You'll find everything for the residential or commercial outdoor technician, Janice Locksmith, 508 West 17th Street here in Bloomington. And update for all you IU baseball fans, tomorrow's game against the nationally ranked Louisville Cardinals, scheduled for 6:05, has been moved to 5:05 at Bart Kauffman Field tomorrow afternoon. 5:05 for Indiana and Louisville. It's the only game scheduled this year as Chris Lemonis goes up against his former team. And I know people are hyped about baseball. Hoosier split over the weekend in a snow bowl at Penn State. But that game time has changed tomorrow to 5:05 instead of 6:05. So it looks like they're keeping an eye on the weather as well.
Gotcha. 333-2665 is the phone number. No scheduling in the near future for Indiana basketball, as they lose to Wichita State, 81-76. I think you brought up a good point in the last segment. And look, we've watched Indiana basketball for years and years and years. We want them to be really good. This team clearly, for most of the year, was not, quote-unquote, really good. I would say that this is one of the better games I watched them play all year long, but it didn't matter at the end of the day. Still too many mistakes. But I think you touched on a key point here. They got the game sped up the way they wanted to. And Wichita State didn't seem all that interested after a while in slowing it back down. And yet they end up losing it, you know, by five at the end of the day. But they were able to, at the very least, get this thing going at the pace they wanted. So, you know, it didn't start that way. Wichita State did not want to come out running, you know, from the first minute. I think later on they were fine doing it because we were giving them too many easy baskets going inside. But they did manage to speed them up. They, you know, one thing struck me about it was about 7 minutes into the game, they showed a picture of the bench. And there's Fred Baker. There's the Wessel kid.
Yeah,
there's
Gabby
Carter. And they're huffing and puffing on that sideline.
Remember, they hadn't played in 13 days.
They hadn't played in 13 days, but I think they're also going a little bit faster than they wanted.
Sure.
This is a Wichita State team that led the was top five or top 10 in lowest number of possessions in college basketball this year. So at the very least, the Hoosiers were able to, I won't say impose their will, but speed it up and get it at their pace.
Yep, and the other thing, Wichita State doesn't give up that many three-pointers. They don't give up that many good looks behind the three-point line as well. So Indiana, again, that's where Indiana was going to win the game. You thought in a higher-scoring game or a game that a lot of possessions were going to be involved, but it just didn't. It didn't work out that way in the end. And a part of that reason was Wichita State was an older, more mature team, and you saw when things were getting out of control, it wasn't jump shots. It was everything going to the lane. It was everything inside. It was everything. It was being patient doing that. And when you only turn it over seven times like Wichita State, Dave, and you only got out-rebounded by two. But the point was, it's extra possessions that they're not giving away. So when they have the ball, they're doing something with it. And it's not just giving the ball back to you. And Indiana had 13 turnovers, which is a respectable number. But, again, that's six more possessions for Wichita State in that whole deal. But we talked about guys couldn't have off nights. Troy Williams goes 2-for-10. I understand he had 12 rebounds. Yes, he contributed. You're absolutely right. But in a game where somebody's scoring 81, you can't have your second best quote-unquote player go 2-for-10. Robert Johnson went 2-for-6, and that was one less piece of the puzzle. Colin Hartman had early foul trouble as well. So Indiana had to play a perfect game against a really good basketball team, and so did Kansas. They didn't do it. But the Hoosiers, in the end, Dave, couldn't take advantage of that pace. They had them down 8 points at one time and couldn't really deliver that knockout blow. And then when Wichita State flipped the tables on them and had them down, 72-65, I know that was at least at the under four timeout. I don't know what the biggest lead was in the second half other than that.
That sounds about right.
Well, I know that was 7:53. Again, this game wasn't out of hand
seven
at any point.
20.
The last time... Who was the home team? Wichita State.
They were.
The last time the visitors led the ball game was 54-53 at 10:52. Indiana never tied or took the lead after that. So, again, that's a quarter of the game that you have to work with there. This game didn't turn on a possession or mm-hmm. two late in the game. So the Hoosiers, it's another part of the learning curve going forward. And to play a team of this level, it shows you you can't make mistakes. Look what Kansas did last night.
Yeah.
They got blown out because they didn't have – well, and their point guard fouls out, and they couldn't make any shots. And offense hasn't been their calling card either. And, Bill Self, boy, they like to shoot a lot of jump shots when you're getting beat. Teams think that three-point shot gets you right back in the games. But when they don't go in, that's the tough part. And the Hoosiers get it to 72-71 after Yogi hits a corner three from a Troy pass. And there you go. Right in the game. Blackman misses one of two the next time down. And then what did in between that, you saw what Wichita State was made of. They went to Baker both times. He takes Stanford Robinson off the dribble, mm-hmm. gets Stanford, who don't, again, this guy ain't playing 30 minutes a game, gets Stanford in a tough spot. This kid's a redshirt junior, puts a shoulder into him, makes a referee make a call. Mm-hmm. Whether you like it or not, that's fine. You want to complain about refereeing, I don't want to hear about it because that didn't decide the basketball game. So what does Wichita State do? They put the ball in their best offensive player's hands, and they say, go get us something. They come down next time after they get the possession. They clear out the right side, and he takes Zeisloff off the dribble, and the same thing. Zeisloff jumps up in the air. Baker gets it. But my point is, they go to their bell cow twice, and he gets four free throws and makes all free throws.
Well, look,
That's what they did in winning time.
I'm not going to blame this on the referees, but one factor that I think was important for Indiana, again, with an inside 3332665 is our phone number. If you'd like to call in with your thoughts, with a team that is struggling inside, to get the foul trouble that they got out of the two closest thing to healthy guys they had inside in Emmett Holt and Colin Hartman, that blew up a good portion of what, I won't
it
say
did.
Blew it up, but it certainly hurt them because now you're talking about Hanner Mascara-Perea, who's coming back from what looked like he was completely re-injured his knee again and had to take a week and a half off. He ends up playing what? How many minutes does he end up playing?
I got it right
19 at the end of the day. You know, if you saw him five, you know, it would have been what about you figured, I think, for this particular game coming off that injury.
And
he plays 19 because of foul trouble and foul trouble only, and you're stuck with Stanford Robinson again playing in the post again.
I'm with you 100%.
I'm not going to blame that on bad refereeing.
I'm not either.
But the fact of the matter is they took out our inside guys.
You know what happened?
And left us with a half-injured guy.
Here's how they took out our inside guys. Fred VanVleet scoring to the basket.
Yeah. Hartman, they put pressure on him. He swats at him like seconds into the game.
Five seconds into the game. Yeah. And then the second one, which Hartman's got to know a little bit more. Mm-hmm. But again, remember, this kid hasn't played a full season either.
Right.
He takes it, maybe I'll get in the way charge, maybe I won't get in the way charge. Right. Well, if your heels are on the line, it doesn't matter how set you are.
Yeah, Emmett Holt had four fouls in 6 minutes. I mean, a veteran team is going to try to put you in that situation.
Exactly right.
There's no question about that.
But
it did. Again, for a team that's already struggling inside, the best chances they had were Colin Hartman and then Emmett Holt, and both of them had to sit for good periods of time. Colin Hartman played 17 minutes. You got 23 minutes out of these two guys, and that couldn't work out real well against at least a tough team. Not big.
Yep.
I mean, again, I think you could have fought just fine with Colin Hartman and Emmett Holt
and
get regular minutes.
And that was the
him.
Toughest part of Hartman's first foul because
VanVleet
goes under the basket.
No
he's driving towards the Indiana
away
bench.
Away from the basket.
Away from the basket with his back to the goal, with his back to the play, and he just slapped at him because you're too amped up, you're too whatever. But again, Indiana, their strength, we thought, perceived, was score, mm-hmm. and getting high scoring games.
Getting up and down.
Well, games that got in the 80s, Indiana was 0-6 when they gave up 80 points. So that wasn't a strength at the end of the season. I bought into, well, they got to score because you don't want to get in these tough defensive couple possession games about it. So when Indiana played well, they scored 80, but the other team
I think you mentioned the key, though. I mean, you talk about it like it's an offensive problem. It's not an offensive problem. The problem is they gave up 80 points in those games. If they get up and down the court and score 80,
it's not an offensive
and
problem.
And they hold them to 72.
Well, that's kind of what I was
– Yeah, I mean, that's the whole point there.
Can't have it both ways, Dave. You got to be able to do one or the other or something. And each year we've seen with Indiana, we play to the strengths of your team, which is a good thing to do in a degree, I think. But as we've seen throughout this year, with the new people playing, and new people, which I mean Blackman, Johnson, Holt, Hartman, Perea, these guys weren't part of that team that defended well last year.
No.
And why did they defend well last year? There's one reason, Noah Vonleh. They had a guy that protected the rim who was a legitimate shot blocker and gobbled up every single rebound.
They also weren't revolving doors like they are this year on the perimeter.
That's my point because none of those guys were. But Sheehy wasn't known as a lockdown defender, but he was above average defender.
Yeah, he wasn't a revolving door.
No. Exactly right.
And you had the mistake.
And Evan Gordon.
The mistake eraser in the back that helps out
a
little bit.
Well, that's
too.
The whole deal. And then Evan Gordon played 4 years of college basketball, or 3 years of college basketball before that as well. So you had a guy who had been around it. Again, being around a coach's son, dad played in the whatever, 100 mm-hmm. years ago. Those are kids you would think have a chance, but they were what? Vonleh was a top 10 NBA draft pick. Sheehy was a four-year senior who had played. Gordon mm-hmm. was a four-year senior who had played. They were replaced by two freshmen, a junior transfer from Illinois State. I'm going to call Hartman a freshman because he didn't play last year. And Hannah Perea, we all know
Hannah
about
was him. Coming off an injury.
And right. And when you throw all that together, you shouldn't beat teams the quality of Wichita State. They didn't. They needed everything to go right. They got a lot of things to go right, and it didn't work out for them. And where they go from here is going to be interesting again because the numbers game doesn't add up right now, and every year this happens, and somehow something happens, and we'll see what happens again.
Got to take a quick break. 333-2665 is a phone number. We'll talk about those numbers when we get back from the break. Dave and Glass with you in the Zone. All right, you're back in the Zone with Dave and Glass on News Talk 96.1 and AM 1370 WGCL. 333-2665 is the phone number. Reminder that we have more of the NCAA tournament coming up Thursday night with coverage starting at 7:15 on here. We'll have them Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday, as we will have all of the tournament games here on WGCL. Of course, we'll be back with you Wednesday night also. 333-2665 is the phone number, so the Hoosiers' season is over. No more complaining about the defense, at least not for any future games to be irrelevant. But what you have right now is you have a roster with no seniors, and so no one's graduating and leaving per se, although we'll see. Yet to be determined, I guess. You have two players committed. I can't swear they're signed at this point. I think they are.
Who?
The two players.
Signed.
Signed. Thank you. Yep. Okay, so you've got them on board at the very least, which you're allowed to do, and they're off recruiting at least one or two or maybe even three others, depending on who you talk to. They're certainly looking at players to come in this fall again, and the numbers mean somebody has to that's currently here has to leave to make room for the people that are here, or the people who are coming in have to end up not coming here. So that's the biggest question, I think, up till now. I think we'd all like to be able to pick and choose who that is. But the key to me to this entire thing is that I'm not sure anybody, or certainly not everybody, knows who is going to end up out of here. And I know a lot of people don't like the oversigning situation. You sound to me, Glass, like you don't like the oversigning situation. I don't love the idea of the oversigning situation. But a reality of the fact with college basketball in particular is that you end up with players leaving every year for one reason or another. I don't know what all the reasons are. Is it the coach sending them on the way? I don't know. Are they leaving on their own like Luke Fisher supposedly did? I don't know. But if you look at the numbers, there's people leaving every year. So how do you handle it? Do you wait until the last minute and end up with a couple guys at the end of the bench that don't play, or do you get who you want earlier in the process and oversign?
I don't know what the word on the street is. I don't know what the wink-wink knock-knock is. In football, they called it gray shirting, right? Explain to the folks
one
what that is.
Gray shirting means in football you would sign your letter, but you would wait to come onto campus and take a scholarship until the spring semester, which would put you out for the fall. You would not be playing. You would not be redshirting per se. You would not be a student. Your clock at a university starts when you essentially start classes.
So you were quote-unquote guaranteed a spot, but...
Well,
that's kind of what I'm getting at.
No, it's fair. I mean, it's absolutely fair. You don't know how it's going to sort out.
And
there's been players, it's a little easier, I think, in college football because there are so many more numbers. I mean, you're talking 85 scholarships.
Well,
you're allowed to do
the
a
thing
go a little above
the
that.
The thing that's interesting is Indiana University the last 6-8 months has come up with this athletic bill of rights, which is really not a whole lot different than what really does go on. Indiana's kind of dressed it up in their own way and changed some issues angles to it. So I'm not sure, because I'm not an expert on this, what exactly that reads. So is I understand the point that players leave almost every year. Was that the case every year? I don't know. I don't remember it. I don't think it matters if I remember or not. Either they did or they didn't do it. Last year you had Hollowell leave, right? Mm-hmm. He was at the end of the year. You had did anybody go pro last year? Noah Vonleh went pro.
Yeah, absolutely.
So there you had it. And then that left Indiana and he graduated, right?
Right.
Evan Gordon graduated.
Mm-hmm.
So you had Indiana scrambling
in the fall.
Last spring to fill two roster spots with Jeremiah April, Tim Priller, and then eventually Emmett Holt.
Mm-hmm.
So where they were dramatically undersigned last year, they're oversigned this year.
Yeah.
And I think somewhere right in the middle you find the balance.
Well, you'd like it to be the case. I mean, there's no question. My
point is you can't have it both ways. If they're three or four under last year and a three or four over this year, if you're allowed to do one or the other,
well,
you got to –
who can't have it both ways, I think, is the question.
That's how you have – that's the system.
If you want a roster management, if you want to deal with having your 13 guys on board, how exactly do you do it? I think everybody would rather you have somebody in your back pocket that hasn't committed yet that's willing to wait on you to come around with that, but that's not usually the case. The kids want the guarantee as much as anything else. They want to know they've got a place to be or at least think they have a place to be. Which one is the right way to do it from a coaching standpoint? I think part of your problem is that 13 scholarships for teams that generally play 8, 9, or 10 players doesn't leave you a lot of wiggle room with guys that either don't work out or get hurt. And that's part of my issue with it. In football, you play somewhere in the neighborhood of 50 to 55 guys, including all of your special teams and all those sorts of things. If you've got certain guys that only play on there, you could get away with less than that if you played some of your starters more often on special teams. Kevin Wilson's crew does that, but they rotate a lot of guys on the position spots.
Well, they do that.
But they've got extra guys laying around, too, so that they can redshirt a few of them. Or if somebody gets hurt, it doesn't kill their roster.
And football programs get upset when they get five scholarships taken away to go from 90 to 85.
Yeah. That's exactly, 85 to 80, but yeah,
well,
I know what you're going.
Yeah, exactly.
But yeah, exactly.
That shouldn't be a huge dent, but somehow it is.
No, I mean, one of my suggestions, and we'll take a phone call here in a second, one of my suggestions is simply look at two or three more scholarships. I realize, everybody at the Butler level and lower and then the MAC level is going to scream that means you're going to hoard more players. But if your issue is you're trying to get past this issue of oversigning, why not do away with oversigning and give them a little bit more wiggle room on their rosters?
Well, or the other thing you do is you waive the transfer rule. That's the other thing. If it's not working out, why make a kid sit out?
They're already transferring.
Everybody's transferring.
333-2665
is our phone number. These rules were written for 1986. It's not 1986 anymore.
Let's bring in Ed.
Ed, how you doing?
How you doing, Ed?
That's a good point. I would like to ask just real quick. I would like to know where the NCAA will beat their chest and talk about following the rules and talking about, doing the right thing, and we have this rule where, they can still, like Kentucky, bring in one and done. The whole, you may lose all four guys, and right now
you might lose seven.
As long as they were eligible that first semester, they could flunk the rest of the year because they're still eligible. But my big question is, how does North Carolina and Syracuse, whenever they're talking about here, Boeheim's going to be hammered next year after the tournament for
nine games,
having his hands caught in the cookie jar, and North Carolina, it's revealed that they had roughly 1,300 student athletes go through a couple classes out there that they found out didn't exist. I mean,
well, the problem with the NCAA is, number one, they are not an investigative branch. They don't have 7,000 investigators that work for them. You know what's funny, Ed? They have the money to do so. They choose not to.
That's because they're an organization of the schools.
Right. The schools govern themselves through the NCAA,
right.
and some things we look at a little bit harder than others, and some things are more important
than
others.
It's like asking Roger Goodell to punish all the owners of the NFL.
Well, no, I think it's a different way, Ed. I think they want a slam dunk case, and they don't want to have to do a 10-year investigation.
They did a pretty good slam dunk on Syracuse.
They did.
Why they're not doing it on North Carolina,
right.
I don't know.
Or the University of Miami, Florida. You can go back through all this. Oh, wait a second. Somebody lied to you about this and that, and that's not true. The point is, how can you investigate yourself, I think, is what it works out. That's like the NFL. Remember, 60 days ago, Ted What's-His-Face was commissioned by the NFL to investigate the Patriots, Ted Wells. How's that investigation going? You heard a thing about it yet?
Is there one?
60 days. Yeah. But again, that's the point. If you investigate yourself and you hire people to do that by yourself, I don't know what the NCAA. The NCAA has thousands and thousands and thousands of issues. But what happens is the game is always ahead of the rules makers. It's like the old joke, the criminals are one step ahead of the cops. Why? They make the rules. If you say I can't put peanut butter on a bagel, I'm going to put jelly on a bagel.
Well, If you say I can't do this, I can do this, and a year and a half later, they did away with that, and it's all okay.
But that's the point. The point is, how does this work anymore? And I think Kentucky puts themselves in that situation. If they choose to go the route and have those talented of a group of players, well, once they get on Kentucky's campus, I think Calipari, he's the exception to the rule, because these other kids wait till those kids make their decision, then they say, I'm going to Kentucky. If those kids stay, they say, hey, it's your lucky day. Kentucky doesn't have a spot for me. I'm coming to your place.
Exactly. Hey, so UNLV, you want me?
Yeah, you get right. Kentucky's getting right of first refusal.
Or do we want to sit around on that guy is another question.
Because now you're talking about
you're being Indiana and somebody's keeping you hostage.
Well, the other point is I think that you'd want to be uncovered than covered, because let's be fair, bringing in Tim Priller and Jeremiah April, let's just call them player A and player B, at that stage in the game, point me out to Kentucky, Duke, Syracuse, North Carolina, Notre Dame. Show me the 13th and 14th, 12th, 13th. They're not playing.
Well, Emmett Holt was the last guy we brought in.
To have those guys, right. He reclassified, so that's a whole other story.
Right.
But the point is, those guys don't always play immediately or contribute immediately, not even at Kentucky. Kentucky's 12th and 13th men aren't playing either. So they give you that rules and they give you the guidelines, and you can do it. And is it what's best for the kid? Probably not. Is it what's best for the university? Probably not. So I don't have an answer for you, but I get why it happens, because used to be in the old days, it was a real big deal for a kid to transfer. Whoa, he's leaving?
Absolutely.
Oh, gee whiz. Jason Collier's leaving to go to Georgia Tech?
Yeah. Mike Recker sending a fax?
Yes, yeah, fax in to tell you he's out of there. So these are – and everybody thought, well, that's just Knight. They didn't get along with Knight. Well, why does it matter? But kids nowadays think, hey, I didn't practice the first day of practice. I was on the second team. I'm out of here.
Right.
So you can't give kids free agency in that sense, but there has to be a happier medium, I believe.
That's a good point. So, but I just wanted to see how you guys think, because, you know, they keep talking about we need to make a good example for our young people.
Well, that's the whole question. That's a good question. Is it about education and then playing some basketball, or is it about having a winning basketball program that graduates kids? I mean, that's up to you, I think.
Here's where I'm coming around to it, and thanks for the phone call.
Always, Ed.
We appreciate it, and I have a hard time not looking at it this way now, and I didn't always, because I was with Ed, I think, to some degree, in that I think the kids ought to get some chance, and you shouldn't be jerking them around a little bit. But, you know, more and more, as you said, guy shows up, thinks he's playing on the second team all year long.
Well,
all of a sudden, screw this. I've been told, I'm great. Why am I sitting behind these guys? I'm getting jobbed over here. I'm going to take off out of here. To me, this right here might be the first lesson these kids actually get that slaps them in the face. It says, hey, you know what? Maybe you weren't all that. Maybe you aren't working like you need to be working.
But here's the
working like we're asking you to work. Because guess what? I can find somebody over here who's going to work twice as hard because they take advantage of the opportunity.
But conversely to that is you recruit him all last spring and say, hey, we need you. We're desperate. You fit exactly what you want. And then if the schools can use you and lose you after a year, the players should have the exact same opportunity.
And they do. They sit out a year in some cases. You know, they get away with it in other cases, not a lot of them, but they certainly do. Again, you know, is our big man situation the same if Luke Fisher's here?
He's not, so he can't be.
But he left in December.
Right.
He wasn't happy with something. You know, what it was. Again, I'm not going to rag on Luke Fisher because I don't know circumstances there. But the point is, he did leave. He did leave out of the blue when you had the situation supposedly handled.
And conversely,
you knew Vonleh was a chance to leave early and a real good chance to leave early. So you had a second guy behind him. And he leaves early, too.
And conversely to that, Matt Roth didn't want to leave and never had his questions answered. Maurice Creek went and averaged 16 points a game at George Washington. We can keep going through this. Nobody can seem to figure out why Remy Abel left. I mean, it just keeps going on and on and on. But when you have that many of them, well, then you and I have to talk about it.
Yeah.
That's what it is, because
you got to talk about at least two guys not being here that are listed as being here.
And here's my thing. You can't tell me all about them, and then when they leave, they never existed. You know what I mean? You can't tell me how great these are when they sign, and then they go, then you're like, well, never happened.
I mean,
that was your future. That was your plan. Plan didn't work. So now what do you do? Now what do you do? Well, you're oversigned by two. Let's say Thon Maker and Thomas Stevens come here. Now you're oversigned by four.
Yeah.
And then I'm taking my shoes off to get to the next.
If they sign.
Well, that's the point. But do you think they're going to say, hey, coach, we're not coming because, well, you're full.
Yeah.
We don't want to be that guy.
No.
No, that's not happening.
Do you want to be held hostage by some of these guys anymore than you already are? We got to take a quick break. 333-2665 is the phone number. Dave and Glass with you in the zone. All right, you're back in the zone with Dave and Glass on News Talk 96.1 and AM 1370 WGCL. Quick programming note, we'll be back with you Wednesday, of course, 6 o'clock here on WGCL. But tomorrow night, Joe Smith Sports Talk, live from Yogi's at the corner of 10th and Indiana. Starts at 6 o'clock, as I mentioned. He will have IU water polo coach Barry King. He will also have NCAA diving champion Jessica Parado and the national runner-up in wrestling, IU wrestler Taylor Walsh. Have they considered combining diving and water polo at all?
Probably not, because it's hard to jump off that platform with a bunch of water polos. And then they got the ball in the net.
A little bit like dodgeball, and you're tucking the ball at somebody while you dive in.
Yards. Barry King takes on a big-time schedule.
Yes, he does. He's out in Arizona recently. Time. And yeah, pretty well, too.
All around, because there's not a lot of it in the Midwest, so he goes east and west, and every week he's going up against top 15 programs. So they were in the final eight last year, which is their finals. So good stuff for them. And Jessica, NCAA champion. Fifth one ever, I believe, individual for Indiana University. So that's some pretty elite company on that side of the tracks.
333-2665 is the phone number. Other quick updates in the NCAA basketball. We have Jeff Goodman of ESPN tweeting out. There have been five players that have transferred or announced they're transferring in the last 8 hours. Also, Steve McClain got the UIC job, and Chris Reynolds immediately fired the head basketball coach at Bradley. So
there you go.
A lot of action already.
It's the season.
It's a busy week. Speaking of busy, though, on the court this weekend, a lot of chalk, but more fun also as Villanova goes down. I think we said we thought they would be the one seed that might
lose.
If
those were our four chances, that was the one that's going to go
out.
I don't
know what I expected NC State, but hey. Works.
The argument is the Big East is might not be the toughest league top to bottom there is. You could argue that
Mark
ACC,
Godfrey's also a guy that doesn't get on put on the top of everybody's best coaches in America list either.
No, and we'll give
he doesn't. I mean,
we'll give NC State credit where it's credit is due. Indiana went down there a few years ago and beat a Mark Godfrey team that was ranked in the country. Don't forget
absolutely.
That as well. And Indiana was a
fourth year, I think Crean's fourth year.
That was on the up and and coming, not the not the number one year either. Right. So Chris Mack is advancing to his third Sweet 16 in 6 years after taking over for Sean Miller at Xavier. Bobby Huggins gets another shot at Kentucky. We'll have all these games for you on Thursday night. Remember the good West Virginia team in 2010 knocked out John Wall, DeMarcus Cousins.
Are
and
they
the gang.
Physical enough?
Oh, that's no question. The problem for West Virginia is not that. The problem for West Virginia is can they make enough shots?
Yeah.
That's the thing, because West Virginia and Bob Huggins'
teams. Is Kentucky, though. I mean,
bring your brass knuckles.
Kentucky doesn't look to me like a soft team by any stretch.
Not at all.
Is that going to cause them a problem?
No. West Virginia isn't going to be intimidated, backed down, scared, because they're dog dirty. They get after defensively, the lead country in steals. That's where they're lunch pail group. They're coal miners. They get after it. And their coach knows how to beat Kyle Parr. He's a big team. He's done it once before. No sweat. Notre Dame-Butler was the game of the weekend. There's no question about that. Poor Roosevelt Jones. Imagine if his knee was healthy. He had like 23-13 with a knee and a half.
They couldn't stop him.
They could not stop him, except on the one play they needed to stop him, the drive at the end of regulation, which led to a Dunham got his three-pointer block game, goes overtime in Notre Dame. Outlasted him. That's Mike Bray's first Sweet 16 since 2003. I know the story of his mother dying in the morning was unbelievably coincidental. And again, that's how many times Notre Dame hasn't done it when he's been there, so it's not easy.
They got to face Wichita State.
They will open things up. 7:15, we'll get you pregame notes Wednesday by that for sure. That's our first game out. And Wisconsin, like I told you last night, death by a million paper cuts. Where do you want it from? You want Hayes to hit threes? You want Koenig to hit threes?
You want
Showalter to come off the bench and get you there? You want Decker to pull up and hit threes or get 100 rebounds? You want Kaminsky to have a terrible night and win comfortably?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, Wisconsin is – now, Oregon's not very good either. Let's be fair. But Wisconsin, again, cruising along, and North Carolina gets a little sleepy on the defensive end.
Yeah, they do.
This Wisconsin.
That game could be in the 90s.
It should be in the 90s by for Wisconsin for sure, unless they just have an awful, awful shooting
Let's
night.
Talk about a former Hoosier in Stevie Alford. Nice draw. Gets a lucky call at the end of the game.
Oh, my God.
And then the nice draw as UAB knocks off Iowa State, so takes out the 3 seed in front of them, and now UCLA is in the Sweet 16.
Only play who is your opponent, right. And now they get a humongous.
How about the play at the end of the SMU game?
It was wrong. I don't care what it says. The ball hits the rim.
You got to call it if he's grabbing it above the rim, don't you?
It is, but it's just poorly written for everybody. The play was dumb enough to put the referee in a dumber position to call
it. Grab it.
But I don't think you've ever seen a game end anywhere on that.
I don't think you can go above the rim and grab the ball. I mean, at that stage,
the argument is it's to the front of the rim. It's not even at the rim, and that's the problem.
If it's anywhere close to hitting the rim,
I know. But even the greatest of physicists would tell us that shot probably isn't going in. But
and I understand that. That's why it's unfortunate.
It's unfortunate.
It's unfair.
Ends that way. Yeah.
But do you want the refs making a judgment as to where the ball's going to go into the basket?
Let's look at it this way: if that call was not, if the whistle was swallowed like it was when the
we'd be okay with it.
Well, who would be arguing for it?
No, that's right.
That's to me. That's my Joe Sixpack rule. If I watch the replay 5 times and can't get it, you got it.
I understand.
You got to see it.
Most of the case, that's my issue. I mean, you see a pass interference,
nobody would.
You go, "There's the guy's not within 20 yards."
Nobody
what are you calling?
Yeah. The ball can't be caught. It's over his head.
Exactly.
Nobody's going to argue that.
But at the very least, with those, you got a judgment call. In this case, to me, if you're going up there at that close to the rim, I don't think you can hit it above the rim.
Exactly right. The kid put the referee in a bad spot. If the referee would have eaten the whistle like they do 99 out of 100 times. Nobody's going to argue that should have been goaltending because anybody with half a brain sees that replay says, if I would have shown you that replay without giving you any context, you would have simply said, well, that was dumb. Well, that's not going in anyway.
There is no one who says that ball's going in the basket.
So lucky UCLA. No, and what have they done? They've turned it into a Sweet 16 appearance. Yeah. They've got a very tough opponent coming up Friday.
Gonzaga.
Louisville and NC State, that might be the first team to 60 wins that game. We'll get into more of these games, obviously, on Wednesday. And Michigan State doing Michigan State things hardly can surprise you this time of year anymore.
Lizzo's got it going still. Can't score.
And you know what? It's bad for Virginia. They play anybody but Michigan State. They've beaten Duke. They've beaten Carolina. They've beaten good teams. And Michigan State knows how to beat them.
Just can't score. Hey, folks, we got to take off. We'll be back Wednesday, so tune in then. Remember, tomorrow night, Joe Smith Sports Talk live from Yogi's and right here at 6 o'clock on WGCL. And we will talk to you Wednesday. You've been in the zone.